Welcome in to Locked On Knicks, the New York Knicks getting railed by the defending NBA champion Toronto Raptors, and for better or worse, we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, and it wasn't too pretty, Gavin. 126-98 was the final score. We were going to go over RJ Barrett's homecoming to Canada, Julius Randle's sneakily bad game despite good box score numbers, Frank Ntilikina might be hurt, Mitchell Robinson, we have differing opinions on in this game, and the rest of the team kind of sucked, but we'll talk about it anyway. Coming up next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knicks is all rebound, back up, off the glass, it's good! RJ Barrett brings the Knicks to the run.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane. Knox foul from behind. Count it and one. As Fisdale pokes his fist.
Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I am Gavin Shaw. I am back in New York. Yesterday, I was in New Jersey actually covering an Arizona State-Princeton game. Beautiful state you have over there, Alex. As implied by that statement, you are in New Jersey, across the Hudson. And we were simultaneously miserable watching Toronto just wreck our beloved Knicks tonight.
Yeah, well, first off, happy Thanksgiving to you.
You as well. I'm sorry.
And to everybody on the, you know, listening today, because we're recording this on Thanksgiving Eve. But, of course, you know, if everybody listening, it's Thanksgiving. I think technically most of the Locked On people aren't putting out Thanksgiving episodes, but we want to do the game recap. So we said, screw it. We'll do one on Thanksgiving. But, yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you listeners, too. Hope everybody has good plans and good food on tap. What do you have on tap, Gavin, for food?
Oh man, I actually have. I need to edit this out. I have no big food plans tomorrow. I'm going to visit my cousins and whatever they have going on. I might snack on you. You've been a lot more proactive than me. It sounds like you have a little feast going on tomorrow.
Yeah, going to my brother-in-law's house, and we're gonna have, you know, the standards, like I think like turkey, ham, mashed potatoes. I'm making green bean casserole. My wife made artichokes au gratin. We're making like some broccoli, like this like Parmesan broccoli recipe. I decided at the grocery store today while I was there to make a fruit tart. So I picked up stuff to make a fruit tart. I think some people got some pies coming. Like I think there's gonna be, I don't know. Probably like carrots or something, and I don't know, all kinds of stuff. Sounds like we're, you know, checking all the boxes. So it should be pretty yummy day. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm certainly, you know, I've been building up my appetite this whole week. I ate like a pig last weekend, so my stomach's nice and, you know, expanded, ready to eat, you know, twice my weight in Thanksgiving food today. So should be good. Anyway, yes, this game, I avoided talking about it as long as humanly possible. But the Knicks lost 126-98, and it was bad. I guess if we want to talk about the one good-ish thing, definitely feel good, if nothing else, was RJ Barrett's homecoming to Canada. He was from the Toronto area. I don't think he's actually from, like, Toronto proper, right? Isn't he, like, from, like, a suburb or something? But
yeah.
Yeah, either way, he came back, you know, to the Toronto area where he grew up and scored 16 points, had 5 rebounds, just 4 assists, had 3 steals. Pretty cool. The only bad part is he shot 5 of 17 and 2 of 8 from 3, put up 4 of 6 from the line, which is kind of an improvement, I guess. And he had 4 turnovers. I don't know. He came back, you know, Gavin, he missed the Nets game the other day with an illness. And he came out in this one, and I mean, he literally even said before the game, like, I still don't feel that good. You know, he must have had the flu or something. I don't know. Something must have been going on. And, you know, he made a point to say, like, he wasn't feeling good still. And, you know, it just kind of showed on the floor, I think. we were talking about it before we started the show, but I think everything looked like it was kind of coming up short for him. But he did have some, you know, some feel good moments. Like, I don't blame him for wanting to get out there and play. I kind of wish, considering he really looked like he wasn't feeling too well, I wish he maybe wouldn't have played 31 minutes. You know, you probably could have just given him an honorary 20 minutes or whatever and then pulled him when it was pretty clear that he was uncomfortable and not feeling well. But he had a couple, you know, signature moments out there. He had during the player intros, he got a pretty nice round of applause. He had a really, really nice dunk where he, you know, cut through in transition and got a nice dunk in the lane. So that was probably a nice highlight for him. He got kind of a pop from the crowd for that one too, which the Toronto crowd, I'll give him like big props. They don't cheer for anything that's not the Raptors there. Like, cause Mitch even like had a couple of sweet dunks once or twice. And like at the Garden, if the opposing team does that, like you give them the like polite, like, ooh, ah, and like maybe like a small clap, you know, like in Toronto, they don't make any noise for anything that's not Raptors related. But yeah, you know, RJ had a few moments, and I thought all in all, it was about as good as you could expect given his health condition.
Yeah, I mean, you could just tell, I mean, not a ton of energy in this one for RJ. I think, you noted it, like all of his jumpers were coming up short. Did have that one monster one-handed jam. And I'm glad, like, when you go back to his career highlights at the end of hopefully an illustrious 20-year career with the New York Knicks, maybe 7 or 8 championships in there. I think that dunk will kind of be on there with maybe some clip of Kenny Albert right before and saying, yeah, RJ's first game ever coming back to Canada, and then maybe cut to his last game in Toronto. Like, they'll definitely show that on the big board whenever he plays his final game there. So I thought that I'm glad he sort of had a moment and on a night when there wasn't really much good coming out of this game for the Knicks, that was certainly the highlight that I'm going to take away from this one. But I mean, I think against any other opponent, he doesn't necessarily even play. How about we get into the Julius Randle conversation a little bit, because he had a pretty darn good start, as the Knicks had a really good start to this game. They ripped off a 17-2 run between the first quarter and the second quarter. We're up by about 11, and Randle was a big part of that as he was shooting really well. Like, I didn't love his shot selection, and I was cringing at some of the threes he was taking, but he started off, I think, something like 3-for-4 and 2-for-3 from three. He had 10 points, 5 or 6 rebounds, and then it just sort of devolved into a typical Randle game where the shot selection, I would say, continued to be bad, because I didn't think it was that good to start off with. And he shot decently from the field, but only 2-for-6 from three, only took 3 total free throws, was completely lackadaisical on defense, I thought, and just generally not really making a positive impact.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I mean, I was saying to you before we started recording that I think Randle has reached a point where he's like a positive box score player now a lot of nights, but a negative overall player. Like, it's really deceiving. If you just go in and, you know, you don't watch the Knicks games, which I could fully understand people not doing at this point, because, you know, if I wasn't so heavily involved with watching this team, you know, professionally, I certainly would be skipping some games as well. But, you know, he had just, you know, pretty nice box score numbers, like 19 points, 8 rebounds, you know, 7-of-14 shooting in about 24 minutes is, you know, pleasing to the eye, at least to look at. But if you actually watched him play, I mean, there was, you know, as you alluded to, his defense was no good. I didn't think so either. You know, I thought it was really, really lacking. I thought that his decision making was bad. Once again, there was one play that I highlighted on the posting and toasting account on Twitter, that was basically, he was driving in transition and he had RJ, you know, kind of ahead of him to his right, and could have very easily, you know, dumped it to RJ, who would have had a very clear path to the hoop, and maybe could have even gotten like a layup and a foul on a reverse or something. And, you know, granted, it was the waning seconds of the half, but, you know, there was plenty of time to pull that off. Like, it wasn't like Randle had to bring it down himself and then like jack up a rush three or something. He had more than enough time to, you know, for either of them to get a layup, and he chose to go for it himself. He got fouled. Eventually, RJ did get the ball on the inbound play and got the free throws. But I mean, the point stands that he continues to make these bad decisions where he's, you know, he'll have wide open teammates and stuff and just decide not to pass them, particularly, you know, guys like RJ and Frank. It seems like, you know, kind of the younger guys, he doesn't look to pass to them and he'll just look to take it in himself. And, you know, it's very rarely a good decision. To your point as well, I mean, his takes on offense were just, you know, pretty bad. I mean, there's no real way to sugarcoat it. He was, you know, taking all these shots where he would like drive right at his defender and then pull out a spin move and then be like putting up, you know, layups with guys like Siakam in his face, who's like a really good defender. And it was just unpleasing to watch. And, you know, some of them were going in, but it almost felt lucky. You know, it almost feels lucky most of the time when that happens for Randall at this point. So, yeah, it was not a great game, you know, despite showing up good on the box score. It was just another one of the, it seems like the only way for Randall to almost be a positive player at this point is to shoot extremely well on these bad shots he's taking. But then when he regresses back to the mean and starts shooting, you know, around 40% again or whatever, then he's objectively not a good player out there, because the only way that he was ever going to be good this year was if he was, you know, essentially a huge plus on offense and very, very efficient to make up for the fact that he's never really going to be a great defender. So, yeah, just overall disappointing from him, despite the good box score number.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, you summed it up nicely at the end. I'm almost tired of talking about the guy because nothing really surprises me at this point. He sort of is what he is, and at least within the infrastructure of the Knicks with David Fizdale as coach, with this roster, I don't think it's gonna change this season. And it's kind of a microcosm of this team as a whole, like when we're looking for any kind of consistency. And honestly, like all things considered, as we've noted, they played pretty well over the last four games, and then you just get this crap show. I'll say PG in a PG-13 way. We kind of know what we have in both Randall and the Knicks. And again, I mean, it's not going to happen, but I would love, I would just like, even obviously, I mean, I want him to be healthy. I don't want anything bad to happen to the guy, but I'd like to see Fizdale just bench him for a game as like a healthy scratch, which he would never, ever do. And I'd just be interested to see what they would look like for a full 48 minutes without him. Because I don't know about you, Alex, not to say that he couldn't be useful in the right role off the bench, but I think they'd honestly be a better team with none of him than the amount of him that they're currently getting.
I'm 100% with you. And the thing that's most concerning with Randall is that we're not seeing any growth out of him, which I think needs to be coached into him. Like, I think that he's the type of player that will definitely fall into his worst habits if he's allowed to. And his worst habits have been, you know, kind of ball hogging and taking bad shots and not playing defense and stuff like that. And I think that Fizdale's been kind of enabling that with him. All right, we're going to take our first break, but first, attention, past, present, and future MyBookie players. For this week only, MyBookie is offering a risk-free bet on the Bears-Lions game. That's today, the Thanksgiving Day game. Simply choose a team against the spread for up to $250. And if you win, congratulations, you've got extra holiday spending money. If you lose, congratulations to you as well. MyBookie will give you all of your money back. It's a no-brainer because you literally cannot lose. It's no risk, all gravy. It doesn't matter whether you're an experienced player or a first-time customer. MyBookie welcomes all to come play, so quit waiting around and sign up today. Do you find yourself wanting to sports bet but have lots of questions? Don't sweat it. MyBookie's patient customer service team can walk you through the process. And the best part is, if you join now, you'll still have one last shot to take advantage of their incredible sign-up offer. Just log on to mybookie.ag and make your first deposit with promo code LOCKEDONNBA. And MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar to jumpstart your bankroll. And that's on top of the risk-free bet. Let me repeat, that's a guaranteed deposit match and a risk-free bet for this week only. So if you're a true football fan and you don't want to let this opportunity pass you by, you simply cannot lose. Make sure you do your part to support your team this season. Hop on the gravy train and get in on the action with MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid. You know, you see some positive growth out of some other guys. Like, for all that we've knocked Bobby Portis a number of times on this show, but I actually think Bobby Portis the last few games has shown a lot of growth to me. Like, he's been more willing to make the extra pass lately. He's been keeping his head up and looking for guys like cutting inside if he gets the ball down low. He's found Mitch for a number of nice, number of nice attempts over the last few games, for example. And, you know, he's been, I think, a little more willing to swing it back outside if something's not there for him. Granted, he still has a quick trigger from three and all that, but, you know, that's another story. But, you know, it's like you see growth from some of these other guys. And, you know, like Frank Ntilikina, we've seen growth from. Marcus Morris, I think we've even seen, you know, in a similar way to Bobby Portis. He seems a little more willing to make the extra pass now and isn't quite so focused on just getting his own shots anymore. And then you got a guy like Randall who's just kind of, it's been status quo the whole season. He's been looking for his own shot and only his own shot, and that's it. I mean, that's, you know, he doesn't seem too concerned with getting the rest of his teammates involved, and I feel this is like pretty inflammatory, but he reminds me of Fizdale in a way, because he talks a talk but doesn't walk a walk with a lot of the stuff. You know, he came out publicly after practice, after whatever bad game of his it was, and was like, all I did all day was, you know, pass the ball all day. I didn't take a single shot. I just passed. That's all I'm going to do from now on. I want to pass. And it reminds me so much of like when Fizdale preaches like defense. All we care about is defense and ball movement and this, that, the other. And then allows the team to keep falling into, you know, heavy ISOs and basically removes pick and roll from the game plan and stuff like that. It's almost like they're made for each other, because they're both like, they will just talk about what they're going to do and then tend to not do it once push comes to shove. And it's disappointing to watch as a fan, for sure.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. That being said, not to distract from our overall, this was an atrocity conversation, but I did kind of like the way the Knicks came out in the first quarter in terms of moving the ball around and at least playing with a little bit of pace offensively. And I think in general, and I mean, clearly they just got outclassed tonight. Toronto is very, very good. They shot the ball ridiculously well, and the Knicks just never had much of a shot. But I did enjoy the way they came out and have been playing offensively a bit more the last few games. And it's clear, and I mean, we've dogged Fizdale this whole season, so I'll give him a little bit of credit, that has been an emphasis in practice in terms of guys moving the ball quicker and not dribbling the air out of it. And someone like Marcus Morris, and I know you noted this, I think either last podcast or two podcasts ago, has really taken that to heart and is getting the ball out of his hands quicker and not just sort of spending 10 seconds of the shot clock facing his guy up before firing up a contested long two. But they just can't sustain it over the course of games right now. Like, they got up to that big lead, and then it all sort of went away. And as soon as Toronto started hitting threes and coming back, it's like they just automatically revert to their worst impulses and their worst habits. And it was awful. And then they had one more nice stretch in the fourth quarter. But if they can just – and they have had games where they've done this over the last few. If they can sustain that over game-to-game, week-to-week, month-to-month, they'll be a much better team. The issue is, again, they're really, on one hand, they're really young, and the guys who aren't really young have never played like that in their career. So I don't really see it happening. I don't think Fizdale is the coach to make it happen, because as we've noted, there's no real accountability amongst the Knicks' best players. But it sort of does offer a path for cleaner basketball, even with a substandard roster. So I'm hoping that's something they can kind of increase over the course of the year.
The thing about this game too, though, and, you know, I wanted to be excited about the fact that they took an 8-point lead out of the first quarter, but they kind of stumbled into that, if we're being honest. I mean, the offense looked fine, but the defense was atrocious in the first quarter, and they kept getting bailed out by the fact that Toronto was just missing all these open looks that they were gifting them. And, you know, it sucks when that happens, but, like, that was just kind of the reality of the situation. They had, like, a false positive in that first quarter, you know what I mean? And then the rest of the game, they just got totally exposed, which was really predictable, because Toronto is one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league, and they basically decided, okay, we're going to keep doing the same thing we've been doing against every team, which is, like, we're going to try to wall off the paint and just let you shoot threes all day. And it's like, yeah, you can't do that against a team like Toronto that's one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league. Like, that works against the Cleveland Cavaliers, sure, that's fine. But you're not going to get away with that against, you know, one of the better teams in the league. You gotta plan a little better and a little more well-rounded and not be trying the same things you were trying against the bad teams. So it's all very concerning. I don't know. Everything's concerning. Everything sucks. Speaking of things that suck, Frank Ntilikina is great normally, but I thought looked really hampered by this groin injury that he's come down with apparently again. You could see that he was wearing, it looked like a special like compression sleeve on his, I think it was his left leg, that was like, you know, extending past his shorts there. Like, you could see he was wearing something extra on his leg, and it seemed like it was hampering him throughout the beginning of the game. But then there was, I actually give credit to Terry Ross from NYK Terry and Trey. He tweeted out that he noticed that after Frank had kind of a collision with Fred VanVleet, which I think was a play in transition, if I'm not mistaken, that he sort of looked a little lame after that. And it was shortly after that, I think, that the Knicks pulled Frank for the game, which, I mean, the game was sort of out of hand anyway. So they started making the transition to garbage time players, which we should give a quick shout out to Iggy in a minute. I'm just going to say that now so we don't forget. But, you know, it kind of sucked. I don't want Frank's groin to be hurt, because that was the very same injury along with his shoulders that really dogged him last year and made it so that he could never really get going, because he had the groin injury and the two shoulder injuries early in the season, and they were just like strains or whatever, but he kept trying to play through them and then would keep getting hurt, and then, you know, would try to play through them and get hurt, and, you know, so on and so forth. And it was a vicious cycle. And, you know, so it's complicated now, because I almost want Frank to take rest, but there's always that risk if Frank, even for medical reasons, can't play for a couple games, that I worry that Fizdale's just going to bury him again and make it so he never plays again. So I have some really mixed emotions about this one, but basically I kind of just want someone to wave the magic wand and make Frank's groin all better, because that would be the easiest solution right now.
Yeah. I thought he made some good passes tonight, but he doesn't look quite as explosive and defensively. I certainly didn't notice that until you pointed it out, that he looked a little bit slower, but I have thought over the last two or three games in particular, obviously the Spurs game, he was incredible coming up with six steals, but hasn't quite been as disruptive as he was in the past. My big Frank note from this one was that he had three, maybe four passes that should have been guaranteed assists, and guys just missed either wide open threes, or in one case, Mitch dropped the ball on what should have been a layup. There was another pass that should have been a layup that was missed. And it left me wondering, if you had just inserted Frank on last season's Warriors for Steph, let's just say he was Steph Curry's backup and Steph got injured for 10 games and Frank got to play those 10 games, what sort of numbers would he put up? And I'm obviously a menace defensively, but I'm just imagining a world where he's averaging like 9 assists per game. And I just think he's sort of become underrated as a passer, because last year he didn't really get to play with the ball in his hands a whole lot. But as a rookie, I remember he made all these really good, like 30 feet on a dime bounce passes to a guy cutting in transition. And I was just thinking, okay, like, as much as I didn't like the Frank pick when they first took him, I remember, ironically enough, I'm kind of outing myself, I really wanted the Knicks to take either DSJ or Malik Monk, but I sort of fell in love with him initially, even more so than his defense, because of his ability to pass the ball. And I'm so happy he's kind of getting back to that. And I just wish guys could pay it off a little bit better, but I'm glad he's starting to show off that aspect of his game again.
Yeah, certainly. To your point, I think that DSJ missed out on a number of assists as well from the same thing. Just guys couldn't. Well, DSJ's passes aren't always his pinpoint, but he had a number where he hit guys for what should have been like open threes, and guys just couldn't hit shots today. The Knicks had like a rare game where they shot really pretty poorly from three as a team and only shot 29%. And not quite 38% as a whole team. So it's not entirely surprising that they wound up losing the game. But yeah, DSJ, I mean, played okay, but really didn't have his shot in this game. Mitch, you know, we could briefly just touch on, and then that's probably about... Well, you know what? Here, let me give Iggy a shout-out real quick. Iggy Brazdeikis came in, which is cool. Shot one of three. He made a bucket in Canada, too, which is nice. And it was assisted by RJ, so that was a nice moment. Other than that, like, Mitch, I thought, played pretty well. I don't know. I know you weren't quite as excited with his play, because, you know, he did have a little bit of a hard time handling stuff today. I think they mentioned at some point that they put a splint back on his one hand for his finger that he had messed up like a week or two ago or whatever. So maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know for sure. But all in all, I mean, he had 8 points, 8 rebounds, and he only had 2 fouls. And that was good for me. That's a good enough takeaway for me. And you know, he played 31 minutes. He also really ambitiously tried to posterized, I think it was Chris Boucher on the Raptors, tried to jump from, like, I don't know, like the restricted area circle or maybe a little bit further out and like dunk it on him off of a dribble drive, no less, which was really unexpected. So that was kind of neat to see. I don't know. But that's my general take from Mitch. My biggest thing was that he played a little more under control, because also one of those 2 fouls happened in the last like 5 seconds, and it was just him being kind of silly, trying to steal the ball back when the game was well in hand and the Raptors were just trying to dribble out the clock. But like, all in all, I thought he showed enough restraint on the defensive end that, you know, it was enough to call it a positive for me for the game.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think, I mean, defensively, I thought he was fine as usual, made a few good plays, and I didn't know about the splints, so that's obviously a big X factor. But yeah, he just couldn't handle the ball in this one. And it just totally felt like he was rushing everything to me. And that's sort of the biggest issues, or one of the biggest issues you encounter with young bigs, where you just want to encourage them to say, hey, catch the ball, take a deep breath, kind of survey the defense and decide what you're going to do. And for a guy who, again, I mean, looks surprisingly good in this respect as a rookie, given that he never played college basketball, it sort of makes sense with the fact that he's still, on the whole, gotten very limited NBA reps. Like, in total, it's almost like he's just kind of finishing up his first season now, or getting to that point with how little he played over the course of the first half of last year. But he really has to work on it, because he just kept fumbling the basketball. There were times where he had a one-on-one matchup and he tried to take a little power dribble and just dribble and put it off someone's leg. With his size, he should be able to catch and kind of just go up, whether it's with a double pump or right up and in on guys. And more often than not, he's either going to draw a foul or get a pretty good look off. And he's just not really thinking that way right now. So I think it's that's kind of the next step for him, because we know he can finish on lobs, though he hasn't gotten quite as many of those this year as he did last year, where he was just absolutely rolling down the stretch. And the only thing I can say about that is, again, it's the overall lack of shooting and maybe the selfishness on this team that he has less of those opportunities created. But because of that, and just in general, he needs to get better in one-on-one situations. It doesn't mean he's facing guys up. He did have that on that dunk attempt. He had that pretty dirty sweep through move on Siakam and kind of blew by him, which surprised me. So maybe there's more room for that in the future. But for now, all I really hope out of him is that he can just take one dribble and if not have a jump hook, just literally try and lay it in or dunk it on guys. And I think that's going to go a little bit more positively than now, where he just seems to be rushing everything he's doing offensively.
I hear you. Yeah, that's all I feel like talking about. I think we've already talked for long enough about this stupid game.
I'm good.
Unless you have anything else to add.
No, I need to go throw up and go to sleep.
Yeah. Well, it's good. I put on my headline for the post game post for PNT that this is a good game to clear your stomach for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Because it was gross. So
little basketball purge.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. Well, to everyone listening, happy Thanksgiving. Gavin, happy Thanksgiving to you as well. I hope everybody enjoys their day, and we'll be back probably not Friday, but we'll be back on Saturday with a game recap for you guys. Till then, enjoy the holiday, and we will talk to you soon. Peace out.